Head on Fire is a Patreon-supported podcast. Supporters of the show get early access to ad-free episodes, a private Discord server, archives, and more. All benefits are offered on a sliding scale, so no matter your level of donation, you never miss out. If you like this show, consider supporting it with a dollar a month or whatever you can at patreon.com/headonfirepod. Thanks, and enjoy the show. I'm both a 90s kid and a giant nerd, which means I grew up watching 2020, that investigative news show that felt like the cool, edgy little sibling of 60 Minutes. Why I thought that a show helmed by Hugh Downs and Barbara Walters was young and cool and edgy, I don't know. Maybe I've always been an old person at heart. It did a lot of things. It taught me to ask good questions, the value of good research, and how a single event could have many diverging points of view that were all still technically true while being different stories. It also taught me that I was being screwed. By everyone. All of the time. Specifically, it taught me that I was being hoodwinked, swindled, and cheated by anyone doing a specialized job I knew nothing about and didn't plan on learning. I remember this one episode where the investigative team brought a car into multiple car mechanics and a hidden camera trained on, I want to say the battery, where they had detached a wire that was easily put back on, solving the problem with the otherwise perfect car in mere seconds. Every mechanic immediately found and fixed the issue, but most came back with these massive auto bills recommending thousands of dollars of estimated repairs the car didn't actually need. From bloated doctor bills to plumbers who cut corners, the 2020 hidden camera investigations taught me early that to ask for help was to do so with the full knowledge that I was going to pay through the teeth because of my own ignorance or inability. Add to that assumption the treatment that women, queer people, and people of color experience when they try and seek assistance, and it leaves a lot of people terrified to reach out and get the help they need. This is one of the few areas of society where social media has actually helped. There are a lot of kind, knowledgeable people out there working in these specialized but maligned jobs that are doing the work of helping people educate themselves and feel empowered to spot bad information, pick out a quality professional, or even do things themselves. Kaya Milstein is known to the internet as the Mechanic Shop Femme. She uses her platform and her new book, Mechanic Shop Femme's Guide to Car Ownership, to make every facet of car ownership less terrifying, from the day you decide to purchase to doing your own regular maintenance and care. And she's showing folks in the margins of society who are typically left out of these spaces that we belong in the shop and the showroom too. Kaya Milstein, thank you so much for being here on Head on Fire. Welcome.
Thank you. It's such an honor. I really appreciate it.
Oh my gosh. I have been a diehard lover of your content now for several years, but for people who might be just now getting introduced to you, tell people who you are and what it is that you do.
Sure. So I'm an automotive educator and journalist, and I'm also an author. My book, Mechanic Shop Femme's Guide to Car Ownership, came out on April 9th. Which is huge. But, you know, I'm a former foster kid. I'm a queer woman that spent about a little over seven years in the automotive industry. I worked in repair shops and collision shops and dealerships in three different states. I've been in front and behind the counter in many different circumstances. And essentially, my goal is to empower folks when it comes to the automotive industry, whether it's buying a car or maintaining it, finding a mechanic, selling it, electric cars and everything in between. And I try to do it in a way that's easy to understand and respectful and kind and acknowledges people's humanities and the places that they're in their life, because, you know, we're
I'm so glad that you do that, because I'm terrified of my own car. Terrified of it. Always been terrified of any car I've ever owned. Terrified of them. But I'm curious, how did you get your start? With cars, because so, they're scary.
Yeah, a little bit. But here's the thing. When I got my first interview for my first job, I didn't have a driver's license. So there was nothing really scary about it. I didn't know the difference between a bumper and an oil change. I knew nothing. All I knew is that I was aging out of foster care. I was 18. I was desperate for a job. It was 2013. It was really hard to find a job, especially if you didn't have any connections. You know, my foster parents were in their late 60s, early 70s. They didn't know anybody who can help me. So I started a GoFundMe, and someone reached out to me through that GoFundMe, and they said, listen, I want to help. I know money's helpful, but it's not the end all be all. What do you really need? Like, what's going to make a huge difference in your life? And I was like, I need a job. So she got me that interview at Sears Department
Store. Wow.
And I thought I was going to be a cashier, you know, a cashier. Yeah. I was going to fold clothes, you know, typical retail work.
Sure.
I wasn't very excited about that. I was not very excited about that, but I needed a job. And it didn't really matter what I did. And I would do literally anything to make sure that I had enough money to move out and put a roof over my head and do all those things that we really take for granted. Mm-hmm. When, because of family support and friends and community gathering around and helping people when they go through this process. So I interviewed, and the HR manager, she asked me what department I wanted to work in. And if you've listened to me talk about this before, the story has not changed. she's like, so what department do you want to work in? And I said, whichever one makes the most money. Luckily, she didn't kick me out. Because I don't know, that wasn't the most tactful response, if you will.
Hey, listen, that is an honest response, and as somebody who has hired a number of people, I can jive with that a lot more than just, oh, put me wherever,
right? Except for me, it was like, where can I make the most amount of dollars so I can move on to the next thing, because this is only temporary, right? And you know, she did a little double take, but she said, appliances or automotive? And I said, cars sound interesting. Let's do that. And of course, her next question was, so do you have a driver's license? And no. No, I did not have a driver's license. I had to get that driver's license. So the fear that I feel like most people had around going to the repair shop or doing these things, I was going to a department store. You're not scared about going to Kohl's or Walmart or wherever. I was going to department store. I was like, okay, I'm going to get this job, whatever. It's going to be the thing. And then here we are.
So, you know, fast forward to today, your platform and your, you know, kind of advocacy as it is, exists at an intersection of so many worlds in which the people in each of those respective worlds don't think the other worlds have anything to do with them or could never be for them. Like the people over here don't think that the, you know, they don't have anything in common with the people over there. So like queer folks, trans people specifically have difficulty getting and keeping gainful employment. They're chronically underpaid, which means it's harder for them to purchase a vehicle. And it's an absolute travesty when they have to have that vehicle repaired, because suddenly those repair bills can be, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. How are you bridging all of those worlds? And what can people do to get comfortable with the idea that they have every right to walk in all of those spaces?
I feel like my history and my story and what I've been through, and just being a overly empathetic person, really forces me to look at the whole picture whenever I go into any situation, and especially when it's surrounding the work that I do. I've seen the people with the least amount of money. I've been the person with the least amount of money. And I really, really, really wanted to make sure that when I wrote this book, that it was going to be equally applicable to somebody who's spending $500 or $1,000 on a car as somebody who's spending $50,000 on a car. Because honestly, the folks that are spending $1,000 on the car, they're spending all of their money. And if they land with a car that doesn't serve their needs, a car that has problems, a car that's going to break down in a week after they buy it, they're going to be the most hurt by that purchase, mm-hmm. and they're probably not going to be able to fix it. And if they fix it, the next time it breaks, they're not going to be able to fix it. And, you know, I've been in that position before. I grew up as the oldest of 15 children. My father is a Hasidic rabbi. We were poor, and I was poor for a long, long time after that fact, you know? So I think the car world belongs to everybody. We all drive cars. Cars are a necessity in most parts of the United States because access to public transportation is crap. And even when there is public transportation, if you cannot get to work on time, you're going to have to leave early to take that bus to get to work on time. You are going to have to work within the confines of that bus line. So if you find a job that's a little bit outside the city, like in Milwaukee, we have a lot of warehouse and other types of manufacturing jobs that pay much better than retail jobs that you're going to find in the city, you're just not going to be able to access those things. And even if you can take a bus to work and you work in a retail store, or if you work at a restaurant or something like that, taking public transportation to these places when you are poor and when you are working two jobs, that 2 hours to get to work and 2 hours to get home and all of that, that takes time away from the time that you have to rest. And rest is so valuable. It's so critical to just be able to get up the next day and function and, you know, hopefully grow and build on your position and get better jobs and do all those things. But if you're constantly exhausted, if you're constantly in this place where, you know, you're... you just can't think because you're so tired. And I know the feeling. I really, really know the feeling. You're not going to be able to get as far. And, you know, this whole bootstraps thing is kind of problematic in so many different ways. So when I wrote this book, and this is my book, right? When I wrote Mechanic Shop Feb's Guide to Car Ownership, I wanted to make sure that everybody would find value in it. And whether that's buying the car the right way the first time, knowing how to negotiate, knowing how to check that out, knowing how to go get your car fixed, how to find the mechanic to fix the car, you know, or it's selling that car that you have that you bought that's kind of a piece of junk and you need to figure out what to do with it, I'm going to try to help you through those processes. And it's not a textbook. It's all in first person. I write like I'm talking to you, just the same way you hear me here.
So, you know, I was a 90s kid. I grew up in the world of 2020. Yeah. And I remember, I distinctly remember all those, you know, investigative shows where you're shown a mechanic who's fixing something that is not actually broken and all, you know, all those hidden camera shows and stuff like that. I am one of those people. I try to be a person who, you know, thinks, you know, that other people are basically good. However, I am also a person that when I walk into a car dealership or a mechanic, I just kind of assume I'm about to get screwed. And mostly I'm just trying to find the person who's going to screw me the least, which is odd for me. But how do you find like a mechanic that you can trust that isn't gonna like fix things that aren't broken and then charge you $10,000 for it? Like, are there warning signs for people? Like, what do you do? You know, how do you spot that?
Listen, I have a whole chapter in my book on finding a mechanic because it's really that important. I'm trying to find it now, and
it's terrifying.
I'm going to read,
you know, auto insurance is such a freaking scam because you pay hundreds of, you know, you pay thousands of dollars a year and then something happens and then they're like, oh, well, you know, it happened during a Uranus retrograde and we don't cover accidents that happen during Uranus retrograde. So sorry. Like, it's just like, it just doesn't ever seem to be covered and it doesn't cover anything. I don't understand.
So. I totally feel you. Listen, this is I'm going to read you the second paragraph in my chapter on how to find a good mechanic, because I feel like it really sums up your experience. Much of the frustration car owners experience in the repair shop is due to not having a good relationship with a mechanic they trust. That and the blatant sexism, racism, homophobia, transphobia, etc., often on display. And that frustration is understandable and warranted. From the time you were in diapers, your parents and movies and television probably hammered home the stereotype that all mechanics are scammers and thieves. It's a pop culture cliche, despite the fact that it's likely that dealerships and corporately owned shops that give hardworking independent mechanics who are small business owners a bad rap. It's a catch-22, really. Car owners don't trust mechanics, and they also don't know much about their car. So everything that a mechanic explains sounds like a lie. Mechanics can have a hard time explaining complicated car problems to customers that are primed to disbelieve them. And if all that isn't enough, discrimination runs rampant in the automotive industry, and many car owners have had experiences that make them wary of trusting another mechanic. So that's how I start. I feel you. At the end of the book, I say something like, listen, I have the same experiences. I do not have automotive educator stamped on my forehead. When I walk into a repair shop, I look like a fat, queer, tattooed woman. And I am treated like a fat, queer, tattooed woman. And not like somebody who knows anything about cars. And sometimes there's a remarkable difference, like a light bulb when they walk back in. And I've had this experience. I went to test drive a car and the salesperson walked back in after basically ignoring us. Like, he snapped at us and he said, what's your credit score? Okay, wait here. And then he walked away because he had other customers. And then a few minutes later, he came back and it was like this light bulb. One of his coworkers told him who I was. All of a sudden, I get an entirely different treatment. There are ways to find really great shops, and it starts with understanding what different types of repair shops are out there, because there are dealerships and there are corporate shops and there are franchise chains and there's mom and pop shops, and they all will offer you a slightly different experience and be valuable to different types of people. So I start the chapter by breaking down what those are, what's the benefits and drawbacks of each of those, because you have to sort of pick your category before you start figuring out how to go to find the mechanic. Then you need to look for the best mechanics that are out there, and you need to do that now before you have a problem with your car. You don't want to be on the side of the road with your car smoking and the tow truck driver being like, hey, where am I taking this? And you don't know where to take it. You haven't built that relationship. The time to start doing that is right now. And I like to call finding a mechanic kind of like dating. It's a process, and you have to do your research and you have to do the legwork and you have to build that foundation so that when you find that good shop, you will build on it and that will grow and you will grow to trust them. You will find a shop where you can ask questions, where they're going to answer questions using language that you can understand, or they're going to attempt to help you figure it out if it's something that they can't quite break down into language you can understand, right? And then I'm going to teach you how to say no in those shops. In any shops that you go to, when you go in for that first service and you're like, oh, this is my interview, I'm going to figure this out, I got this. And then they try to pressure you into doing a whole bunch of work that you weren't prepared for. And honestly, you have to think critically before you say no. You have to decide if no is the right answer at the right at this moment, because if your brakes are falling apart or there's something that's safety critical, you need to consider what you're going to do. And that doesn't mean you're going to do it there. You can get a second opinion. You could go do it somewhere else. You can go park your car in your driveway and not drive it until you're ready to deal with it. So don't ignore their suggestions. But sometimes when people get super pushy, I have strategies for how to say no. And then at the end of all that, once you've found your great shop, I'm going to teach you how to be the best damn customer you can be. Because it's a two-way street.
So the other side of your platform kind of teaches people basic, you know, basic automotive skills, how to be your own mechanic and you know, little ways that make sense for a person to take care of the thing that they own, right? You know, I will say I am genuinely terrified of learning many of these skills myself. There's a rather legendary story in my house. When we first moved into this house, the dishwasher didn't work, and we thought, well, we'll start our kitchen upgrades with the broken dishwasher that doesn't work. We're going to fix that, and we're going to do it ourselves because we're two adults. We've got degrees. We're smart people. We know how to do stuff. We can read instructions, and several hundred dollars, and hundreds of hours on YouTube later, we had a dishwasher that did not wash dishes, and a plastic bag wrapped around hoses that were leaking, and we ended up having to just pay for the plumber to come out anyways, and pay the exact same. So we paid double. So we've learned when to just trust experts. I am genuinely terrified of doing it. Now, it's not that I'm scared of learning a new skill. I can learn a new skill. I just need somebody to show me. I need somebody like there to hold my hand and show me. So how can scared people like me learn? And what's a good starting point?
Sure. So just want to clarify, I do not teach people how to be their own mechanic for the reasons you just described. There are a lot of people out in the universe teaching people how to fix their own cars. I am not one of those people. I do teach certain limited DIY things that you can do that is very hard to mess up and that almost anybody can do with no matter what kind of tools or access they have. So you can rest assured that if you go watch my video on how to replace an air filter, check your tire pressure, check your engine oil, you got this. These are super simple, super straightforward things that for most able-bodied people is going to be simple tasks for them to take care of. But there's a reason why I don't teach DIY. Besides the fact that there's a lot of other people out there that are doing it, I find that most car owners aren't interested in going and fixing their cars in their own driveway. That's one. Number two, cars are getting a lot more complicated. They're far more like a computer today than they ever were. And what might have been very simple and straightforward to do 15 years ago is not the same as it is today. And third of all, the time it will take for you to learn and get the tools needed to do these things is a massive investment that isn't usually worth it if you're not planning to do that service again. So if you want to learn how to fix your own car, go on YouTube, find creators. I don't have any suggestions. I really stay very far away from the car side of the internet when I can.
But you do have a very, you know, you do have a very specific way of, like you said, you do kind of introduce people to their own car. You do kind of help people understand like how to do basic maintenance on their own vehicle, which even that, I'm kind of scared. I'm like, I know that if I replace my own air filter, I'm going to do it inside out and my car is going to explode. I know it. I will have the exploding air filter.
You said like, you own a home. Do you change the air filter in your HVAC system?
I do under duress, and I watched a lot of videos. And then when our HVAC guy was out, I had him watch me do it to make sure I wasn't doing it wrong.
And did you get it?
I did. But again, I did finally have a professional out to the house, like showing me. And that's my whole thing is I can learn a new skill. I just need somebody to make sure that like I have many skills. I have many talents. I don't lack in that. I don't seem to have any of the skills required to be an adult. And I don't want to learn them.
Well, let me tell you something. Learn them. To change your engine air filter. In most cars, I have done it in less than 1 minute. And you know how I know that? Because back before TikTok became a big thing, I did not know anything about editing videos at all. You have to keep in mind that I was raised in a Hasidic Jewish home without television, without movies, without books, without all of those things that we take for granted as Americans. You know, I was raised without a basic education. I didn't learn math or science or English or any of those things. Okay. So if I could do it, most people could do it. Now, doesn't mean you have to, but here's what I could tell you. When I started making my videos for Instagram, I made the air filter and jump starting a car were my first videos. And I remember I didn't know how to edit. And back then you could not post a video on Instagram that was longer than 1 minute.
Yeah.
And I did not know how to edit, not even how to split and make something a little shorter. I knew exactly zero about any form of that kind of technology, okay? Somebody had to teach me how to use Instagram when I started my Instagram account. And they taught me a little too well because I was like, oh, let's go. I got this. Anyhow, the first time I changed my air filter on video, I did it in less than a minute. If I can change it in less than a minute, then after watching some videos and my video and maybe reading an instructional, because if videos aren't doing the thing, maybe you need to read it. People learn in different ways. You can consider giving it a try, or you can find a really great mechanic and they can replace it for you. Because if you're stressed and scared about it, then go find yourself a great mechanic. and have them do it. And you know what? If they're a really good mechanic, they'll probably even show you how to do some of the really simple things, like changing your air filter or checking your tire pressure, or checking your oil level, like things that you should be doing between visits at home yourself. You can look at my videos, but my videos will only help you to a point because they are specific to the car that I'm working on. Go on YouTube and look up the specific vehicle you have. So let me give you an example. If you drive a 2005 Honda Accord, look up 2005 Honda Accord engine air filter replacement, because you don't want to just see a filter get replaced. You want to see that filter get replaced. So you know what tools you need, if any. Many filters you can replace without tools. Subarus and Hondas, you open two clips, okay? You open two clips and you put the air filter in. Very straightforward. And if not, then you get a mechanic to do it and it's okay. You just have to find the right mechanic first.
So something that you, and I want to go back to a point that you made earlier, you know, when that person who has $500, $1,000, you know, when that person is scraping together every last penny that they have to buy a car, right? Because you do also talk in your book about teaching people kind of how to, what to be on the lookout for whenever they're purchasing a car, especially a used car. So when that person's scraping all that money together, obviously there is some risk there. If there's an older car, I'm assuming that I might have to have some kind of repair in the near future. But
you will likely have to have some kind of
repair. Yeah. I will say I did get really lucky last year. We bought an extra car for my husband. And I asked my mechanic, because I at least know enough, because I've been watching your videos for so long, that I did establish a relationship with a really great mom and pop mechanic in the area that does not screw me over, and they're great. But I had them help me find a car, and I found, what is it called, a survivor car, which is that like that thing that you see in like TV shows where it's like, oh, this is some grandma's car that's been in her garage for like 30 years. And she used it to drive to church and back. And that was it. Like it had like no miles on it. And it was like from 1993. And it's this perfectly preserved blue, like gem.
I love that.
It runs, the engine looks brand new. It looks like it has never left the garage, because it practically didn't. But for people that don't get that lucky. So what are some flags, some questions to ask? What do people need to be on the lookout for if they're on that end of, listen, I know I need to be able to get to work. Unfortunately, I live in a country where we are car people. We have to be car people. What do I look out for? Is there a brand? Is there a kind of car? Is there a thing that's easier for me to take care of? Like what should people be looking for?
So the less money you have to spend, the more money you need to put aside for repairs that your car is going to possibly have. Because when you're purchasing an older vehicle, even the perfect older vehicle that you purchased, especially the perfect older vehicle you purchased, you're probably going to need tires.
Yep. Yeah.
You're going to need tires because the tires are dry rotted or they're reaching the end of their life, even though they have perfect tread. When you're purchasing
the first thing we had to do, they were old.
And how much did you spend on your tires?
I don't remember, but it was not cheap. Because they're big tires. This is a
more than $500.
Those old cars are big tires.
Exactly. So you're going to need things. You might need belts, you might need hoses, you might need other elements when you're purchasing that vehicle. So number one, figure out how much money you have and then put aside a chunk of money. You're going to need to get insurance. You're going to have to pay taxes and registration in most places. And you're going to need a little bit of money for those initial repairs. Second, the absolute most important thing that you can do to get the best car for your money is do what you did. Take the car to a mechanic for a pre-purchase inspection. This pre-purchase inspection is worth every single penny that you spend on it. It could be free, could be $50, but it is absolutely worth it. Because if you buy a $500 car that's going to fall apart on you tomorrow, it's going to be a problem. Also, $500 cars don't really exist anymore.
Usually you're getting money.
Very, very lucky. You're buying it from a friend or a relative or something like that. So Number one, make sure you put some money aside. Number two, whatever you do, take the car into a mechanic and get a pre-purchase inspection. This doesn't mean that you're not going to buy the car because it may have some problems, but at least you're going to know what those problems are and how much it's going to cost so that you can decide if it's worth it to you. And so you can negotiate because you can reduce the price of the car if you find some of those problems. So that would be number two. And number three would be, don't get too hung up on the brand of the car if you're spending less than $8,000 to $10,000 and focus more on how well that car was taken care of. So like you did, you're looking for a car that's been very well maintained and garaged. You want to buy a car from somebody who loves it, somebody who treated it like a member of their family, somebody who got the car washes and did every single oil change on the car and really took care of it. And what you're going to look for is you're going to look for ads that are super detailed. So lots of photos, a description. And if you find ads that don't have that, don't be afraid to ask for more pictures or more information so you have that in front of you. You are looking for somebody who has a lot of maintenance records for their cars. If you go to look at a car, they come out with a binder full of records for you to look at. That is a great, you are on the right track. And you need time. If you go and buy the very first car you find at that price point, you're probably not going to end up with the right car. Buying cars from individuals takes time. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go look at 100 cars, but you have to do a lot of research from the back end, and you have to talk to the people who are buying the cars and look through the vehicle pictures and read the descriptions and do all the things to help you get the best vehicle. And then again, I have two chapters in the book on how to buy a car, how to budget for it, how to finance it if you decide to go that route, how to lease a car, how to check over the car before you take it to the mechanic, because you don't want to waste your money taking it to the mechanic if there's already major red flags before you even get there. Like, that's the last step. That's the step after you've decided you're going to buy it, as long as there are no major things that come up.
So how do you, you know, getting not necessarily fully away from cars for a second, but, you know, you're somebody that exists in a male-dominated space, right? How do you deal with gatekeepers? Because there's a lot of folks that watch your content because it's kind, it talks to people in a language they understand, but surely, you know, in your own learning of your own expertise, like as you were coming up, how did you deal with folks that said, oh, well, you're not one of the boys?
You know what? I've tried to live my full self and bring my whole sparkly, colorful self to every situation. And I've tried to live in a way that I was like, well, you know, if I'm not for you, I'm not for you. Your loss. And you know what? I put my fat, colorful self on the cover of a book that's being published by one of the larger publishers in the world. I think Hachette is the second largest publisher in the whole world. I live loudly and proudly, and I refuse to shrink or hide or fit myself into whatever box that people want to put me in, because I believe that that is going to benefit me, but it's also going to benefit everybody in my orbit. Like, my goal isn't just to make the path for myself better. My goal is to clear that path so I can help the people behind me come up in it. And, you know, I don't talk a lot about, you know, how I help the community and stuff like that outside of what you see on social media, but whenever I'm doing anything, I try really hard to think about how it's going to impact the various communities and people around me, how it's going to affect the most marginalized people among us, because I need it to serve as many people as possible. However many people are willing to see beyond the colorful, sparkly, fat, queer person and find value in what I do, that's who my goal is to serve. And you know, I do it in a lot of different ways, but like, if I give you an example from most recently, I have a pay it forward option for my book. You can go on my website, mechanicshopfem.com/book, and you can buy a book for somebody else who needs it. And you know what? If you need a book, If you can't afford the $20, if you have a car that you are scared is going to have a major problem, you probably can't afford another car problem or another bad mechanic or another car purchase. So go and request yourself a copy. We're going to give as many as people buy, you know, as many books as people are willing to donate, we're going to give those away. I'm going on a book tour. I spent a long time building this book tour. I'm going to 16 woman queer and POC owned mechanic shops, not bookstores, not libraries, mechanic shops. And this supports the community in so many different ways. One, it connects my followers and my community and communities that have found me through this book. And it connects them with their local repair shop that hopefully does things differently than what they're used to. And then it also gives these repair shops a chance to build a client base in these spaces, because that's hard when you're a woman or you're a queer person or you're a trans person or you're a Black woman or, you know, a bisexual Latino in Ohio. Like, that kind of stuff is hard. And, you know, that so that supports the community in that give and take way. And then the money that we get from the ticket sales, $5 per ticket, that money will go into a scholarship fund named after my mentor and friend, Jill Strada, who is an ASC certified master mechanic. She's a queer woman. She's an absolute badass. And we're going to help the next generation. And by next generation, like, it's also my generation. I'm 29. We're going to help the next group of people that are entering the automotive industry with tuition if they want to go to school, but they don't need to. The most helpful thing that you can do to help somebody in the industry is help them get tools. And we're going to give them the money to do that. We're going to give them the money for clothing, because women do not find clothing that fits them at repair shops. And that's sort of a way to give back. So yes, I want to live authentically, fully, as big as I can, but it's not just for me, because shit is hard. It's for everybody. And hopefully it gets easier. Hopefully.
Speaking of things that don't fit.
Yes.
I did want to ask you about something near and dear to my heart. Because when I am searching for a new car for me to drive, I always have to Google things like cars for tall people 2024. Yeah. Cars for tall people. I have friends that have to Google things like cars for fat people. Like, yeah. Why aren't cars made for people that are, like, different sizes? And two, how do you find a car that fits a bigger body, whatever direction bigger that you're in? Because I never really fit in a car, ever. And I'd like to one day.
So for taller people, there are a lot more resources than there are for fat people. So like you said, you can Google best cars for tall people. You can Google best cars for people over 6 feet. And luckily enough, cars are designed to serve men. And men tend to be on the taller side. So there are definitely options out there. The first one that comes to mind is the Ford F-150. I know that's a car that is that people, I know, don't give me the look. That's the car that a lot of fat folks and especially tall folks find the most useful, because, you know, it's made for men.
Listen, I also want it to be pretty. Okay. Yes. I want it to be pretty and I don't want a truck.
Listen, you're talking to a dyke that would love a pickup truck. So hello, we may have different versions of pretty, but here's what I can tell you.
My husband agrees with you. My husband wants a truck. My husband is a truck guy. I am not, like, the most I'm willing to do is SUV. And I do have a cute little SUV now. I do love it. It's named after the Owens family in Practical Magic. You didn't need to know any of that. But yeah.
Yes, I don't know what you're talking about.
What?
Hello, I was raised in a Hasidic Jewish home without movies, books, music, or anything.
Yeah, listen.
I'm sorry.
Sister.
I just got a TV years ago.
We are going to get your wife. We are going to light some candles. We are going to watch Practical Magic. And I'm going to fix this because I can't.
My wife has all the candles for you. Don't worry. She makes the candles. She'll have enough candles for you. And I will try not to fall asleep. I did watch Mean Girls. I don't know if it's in the same genre, but I watched. Not the musical. I can't do musicals, but I will. My wife made me watch. Oh, I think my foster dad made me watch Conehead, or maybe it was my wife. She occasionally will be like, "We have to watch this coming of age movie."
I'm going to DM your wife and I'm going to be like, "Listen, you need to fix this right now. You need to get, you need to fit Practical Mad right now."
Right after the book tour.
Okay. So big cars for bigger people that are not the Ford F-150.
Yes.
How do you find that? Are things changing?
So I know you see a lot of people's successes on social media. This is where I failed pretty miserably. A few years ago, I launched a survey for cars for bigger bodies, and I had over 4,500 people who filled out that survey. Actually, I did this twice. I launched the survey, and it didn't work really well. So I launched a second survey because I didn't set it up correctly because my data analysts are some smart people, and I am not a data analyst. So I launched a second survey that was supposed to be better for the data. And then I didn't know what to do with it. And I tried to, it was just so, I put in so much into this survey and so many different elements and so many different things that I made it a big headache for me and everybody. However, so I've been like struggling with this for a long time and like trying to figure out what I was going to do. I've been paying for SurveyMonkey, which is not cheap, to hang on to all of those responses for all this time. And I've been paying for a website, carsforbiggerbodies.com. And I've been trying to figure it out. And I've been writing a book and, you know, doing all those things all at the same time.
Not that you're not busy or anything.
No, not at all. But I went to a Women in Auto Care conference in February, and I sat down next to this queer woman from North Carolina, and she owns a data analytics company in the automotive industry. And so first we were talking about sponsorships and whatever, and then I was like, you don't need to sponsor me because it doesn't fit. You know, you're not serving customers. You're serving car clients. That's not helpful. But I really need help with this project. I have all this data and I don't know how to make it useful, how to be able to get those cars for bigger bodies to people. Like, what are the best vehicles? So we sat and she spent some time doing some number crunching, and after the book and the tour, and I get a little bit of rest because I've been going for like 2 years now. That's my next thing. I'm going to really try to invest my time and energy into building that, whether it's on that website or on mechanicshopfem.com, into really taking the data and the points that she's been able to crunch for me and continue to like dig through that, and hopefully, you know, come up with some articles and some spaces where people can find the best cars for fat people and the best cars for fat tall people, because I asked people how tall they were in the survey.
I'm very excited for that personally.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
6'6", and I just want to fit in a car that isn't. I want to fit that isn't the Ford F-150.
Have you ever tried the Subaru Forester, or you're not gay that way?
I'm sorry. I'm not a lesbian.
Subarus are for everybody. There's a lot of good reasons to have a Subaru. One of them is that tall people happen to like them. Also,
it's not
a Subaru. By the way, the new Forester, it looks like an SUV. It does not look like the wagons from back in the day, okay?
So
there's a Subaru on the cover of my book. Hello. No, here's the beautiful thing about it. It has a telescopic steering wheel, and anytime you can get a car.
My car has that. I love it. I love it so much. I can pull my car all the way back. Oh, I love it. I have the Rogue. I have the Nissan Rogue.
Okay, that's what I want to hear. Now, if you are a fat person, you should go listen to Carissa Einikin from Fat Girl Flow, who had hell with the Nissan Rogue or Murano, at tons and tons of problems. That car literally fell apart on them.
Oh no.
But if you're a tall person of, you know, of smaller size, then that could be great for you.
Oh God. Oh, well, that's terrible. I will. I mean, I, Mine's been a dream, but only because, again, I found a really great local mechanic who's been keeping it running.
No, their seat, like, literally fell apart on them. The trim came out. Like, there was just a lot of problems.
And oh, God.
It was directly weight related. It wasn't the mechanical problems. It was, but yeah, my wife is short. She just leased 2023 Nissan Leaf, which you would probably hate. It does not have a telescopic steering wheel.
So many of those cute little cars are they're little. They're so little.
If you want to try another car?
My dream car is a 2003 green Volkswagen Beetle. You're like the new Beetle. Do you remember those? I was obsessed with those. It's still my favorite car of all time, and I want one so bad. And it's not like I couldn't buy one with my adult money, but yeah, I love those cars. They're just very tiny, and I am not.
How about a Honda Element?
I like those. The problem is the legroom. Hondas are not actually as tall friendly as you'd think they are. They're not. Yeah. They're not great. Okay, I do want to ask you, because I know that we're about to run up on time. What do you think about this new era of vehicles, EVs, hybrids, these newer technologies? Are you loving them? Are you hating them? What do people need to know when interacting in those spaces? Just like, what's your up or down on them?
I just want to let you know that electric vehicles are not a new technology. Madam C.J. Walker drove an electric vehicle, a Weaverly, back in the late 1800s. Okay, like 1890-something. It is not a new technology. It's been around for a long time. Toyota launched the Prius in the year 2000 in the United States, and before that in Japan. There are a lot of problems with all kinds of vehicles. There are problems with regular vehicles that are polluting and that are causing people to have to flee because of the climate crisis. And there are problems with electric vehicles and mining for the components that make up the batteries. And there are problems with all different types. And I wouldn't necessarily say that electric vehicles are better for the environment, but you should probably talk to a climate scientist on that. Because if you live in a part of the country where you're electricity is coal powered, then you are not helping the environment with your electric vehicle. That does not mean you should not buy an electric vehicle. That does not mean that that is what is coming. This is what it is. It does not mean electric vehicles are bad vehicles. They're not. Like, my wife just leased one. And again, it also doesn't mean that the Nissan Leaf is a good fit for you. My wife drives less than 7,000 miles a year, and she leased it for 2 years, and it's going to work beautifully for her. I have a lot to say on the subject. I have an entire chapter.
Read your book. Go read your book.
I know. I have an entire chapter about electric cars and hybrids where I dispel myths, where I share things. They are not the right fit for many people. If you do not own a home, don't buy an electric car, because you're going to need to install a charger in your home in order to make it the most useful to you, or else you're going to be running around charging your car and wasting your time when you could be charging your car while you're sleeping. If you cannot buy an electric car and you want to buy a great middle ground, hybrids are fantastic. The technology has come a long way. Their batteries don't cost nearly as much as they used to replace, if you even have to replace them at one point. And that would be definitely something I would consider.
Do you have a favorite car?
Like my dream car that your I would dream, want.
Your big, juicy, just, oh God, this is just, oh, if you as a car.
Boy, I would get the Lexus GX 550. It's a big, boxy, glamorous, comfortable SUV. It also cost a fortune and probably isn't something I'm ever going to have a chance to buy. But, you know, who knows? Lexus, get in touch. I know y'all sponsor a lot of queer people and queer prides and all the things. You know, get at me.
So for people who want to get a little bit more of the Mechanic Shop Femme experience, where can they find you online? And what is the title of that book?
Sure. So it's super easy. I'm Mechanic Shop Femme on every platform except for Twitter, where I'm Mechanic Femme. But you'll probably be bored following me on Twitter anyway. Mechanic Shop Femme on all platforms, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram. And my book is called Mechanic Shop Femme's Guide to Car Ownership. It's available right now. You can order it by going to my website where I'll have everything linked, or you can go to Amazon, bookshop.org, or your favorite local bookstore.
Thank you so much for your time. I'm so appreciative of you. And I am just such a big fan of your platform. So I am like fanboying over here. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And that is going to do it here for this episode of Head on Fire. My thanks to my guest, Kaya Milstein, whose new book, Mechanic Shop Femme's Guide to Car Ownership, is out now and available wherever fine books are sold. Now, if you like the show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. Consider sharing it with your friends on social media. See, that didn't cost any money. It didn't cost a single penny, not one. You can like or rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And while you're there, consider leaving a review. Again, all free. This costs you nothing, and it means everything, because reviews help recommend the show to other listeners just like you. If you hate the ads at the beginning and the end and the middle, I totally get it. I'm a listener too, but we all have bills to pay. Consider joining my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private chat, and, you know, fun little goodies along the way. And it only costs like $1. It costs $1 a month, or $12 for the year. It's great, and you're supporting media that you're already loving. So, you know, just go to patreon.com/headonfirepod. You can sign up for a month. You can sign up for the year in advance. It's great. Or if you just want to connect with me on social media and let me know how much you loved the recent episode, you can do so at Head on Fire Pod. I am on TikTok and Instagram and Threads and Blue Sky. And technically I'm still on Twitter, but I really don't want to be. But yeah, if there's a social media platform, I'm probably at Head on Fire Pod there. Anyways, thanks so much for tuning in and downloading the show. Thanks so much for streaming and telling all of your friends. I'm going to go, but as always, never stop seeking illumination like a man with his head on fire seeks water. Be well.